Get ready to be mesmerized. Get ready to be entertained. Get ready to be informed. And most of all, get ready to listen. The latest sports news, great interviews, and the best coverage from around the nation's capital. It's Listen In with KNN, the sports sound of the district, right now on AM 1340 and 96.9 FM, Fox Sports Radio. Here's your host, Kelsey Nicole Nelson.
Friday and time for an all-new edition of Listen In with KNN. Now, today's show will bring you knowledge and give you some more expertise in the world of collegiate athletics. As I welcome Miss Monique A.J. Smith to the show. And with that, it means it's time to sit back, relax, and get ready to listen in and follow along with the conversation using hashtag ListenInWithKNN.
It's time to recognize those individuals that are doing good in the community and making a difference in the sports world. Without further ado, Kelsey presents this week's Do Good Sportsperson Award nominee.
Now, as I like to start every show, because we always need some positivity, and I'm keeping this positivity train going in the 2018 year, I would like to honor none other than the one and only Mr. Drew Brees of the New Orleans Saints as this week's Kelsey's Do Good Athlete of the Week. Now, if you're wondering why I'm honoring Drew Brees, of course, he's pretty much doing more than leading the New Orleans Saints into the playoffs, of course, which they will play this weekend. But back in December of 2017, the Drew Brees Foundation opened the Walnut Street Playground in Ogden Park, which is New Orleans' first playground that caters to children of all abilities. Yes, that's right. Drew Brees opened a playground for those children with disabilities. I thought that was just such a wonderful thing to do. And as I just mentioned, it's the first of its kind in the city of New Orleans. Now, this year, the city of New Orleans is celebrating its 300th year since its founding. And here it is, the first playground like that. So thank you to Drew Brees for being such a pioneer in this front. And then if you want to know more about the playground, I mean, it's such a cool thing. I suggest you go see it. But basically, it has play equipment that is accessible by wheelchair. And guess what? There's also a zip line that doesn't require any upper body strength. Everything was pretty much mapped out with all the different abilities in mind. And if that's not enough, Drew Brees' son, Kalen, actually got in on the act. And back in December, when the playground was first opened, he actually got to push a new friend on the zip line. But of course, he needed help from his strong dad, the one and only Mr. Drew Brees. So congratulations once again to Drew Brees for earning honors this week as Kelsey's Do Good Athlete of the Week. Now, there is still an action-packed edition of Listen In with K&N, as we have yet to welcome today's special guest. So it's now time for a quick commercial break, and we will be right back.
Jerry's Burger Spot has all your Friday night tailgating favorites, from their never-frozen burger, fresh-cut fries, ice cream, and milkshakes. Jerry's Burger Spot offers the best lunch, and if you desire a fresh handmade burger or some delicious ice cream like Mom used to make, stop by Jerry's Burger Spot at 3815 Jefferson Park Road, Prince George, Virginia, right off 36 near Fort Lee. Jerry's Burger Spot. Remember when.
Welcome back to Listen In with KNN on Fox Sports Radio, 96.9 FM and 1340 AM, the sports sound of the district and beyond. It's now that time to add a little bit more flavor to my show as I welcome in my special guest, my mentor, a leadership strategist for athletic departments and African-American athletic administrators. She also travels across the country conducting university workshops for various staffs and student athletes. If that's not enough, she also hosts a weekly podcast that spotlights the career of African-American athletic administrators. Then this year, she will be relaunching her webinars as the Advancement for Athletic Administrators Academy. So without further ado, I would like to welcome my special guest, Mrs. Monique A.J. Smith, to the show. Monique, how are you?
Hi, how are you?
I'm wonderful. I am so glad to have you on. It's a true honor.
Well, I am ecstatic about being a guest on your show.
Well, thank you, because I know you keep your hands full. I know you also have a show. So can you tell the listeners a little bit more about A Chat in the Garden that you host?
Well, A Chat in the Garden is a weekly podcast where I spotlight the achievement of African-American athletic administrators that happen to be women.
Right.
And that's really a joy for me. We're in our fourth season. So.
Oh, nice. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. And it's a joy because this is a great time to be a female in athletic administration.
Yeah.
The needle is moving. So even like this past week, Renee Bostic just became the new athletic director at Notre Dame, Maryland, which is Division III, but she was athletic director at Megger Evers. So
okay.
That's the AD twice. Sherita Freeman became the AD at Lafayette College, a Division I institution.
Nice.
And I'm really, really proud, one of my longtime mentees, Dr. Ingrid Wicker McCree, athletic director at North Carolina Central University, was named the top 10 most influential people in the triangle sport for 2017.
What an accomplishment. That's huge. I mean, that is so exciting. And I know that motivates and pushes you, you know, when you see these continuous success stories. But now, Monique, I want to ask you, I mean, obviously you love, you know, highlighting these different women. But tell me a little bit more about your background and why this is so important to you to spotlight these women.
Well, I'm glad you asked that. This is 2018, so I'm a 28-year veteran of athletic administration. I graduated from Hampton University in 1990. My first job was sports information director. So you can imagine I was the only female in the CIAA as a SID, and I was the only African-American female SID. I think it was only two or three of us when I would go to COSATA. And then you fast forward a couple of years, so that's 1990. In 96, I was named interim athletic director for St. Paul's College at 28 years old. So I had to learn pretty fast.
Right.
And there weren't anybody that looked like me that I could learn from. I was blessed to have the first African-American female athletic director for the CIAA in Jeanette A. Lee. So that was my boss. She hired me, and it was a great learning ground. And how she treated me is how I try to treat every female that comes into my path, because Ms. Lee did help me. And she helped me. I only had it for 1 year. But she told me where the pitfalls were. She would tell me the comments that I would make and why people respond the way they would. So it's not just skill factor. It's the soft skills that will deter your advancement. And so the setting that I had with Ms. Lee, people tell me that, let me just back up. So at 28, I was athletic director. And then 2 years later, I go to Division I, and I am a compliance director for Division I program at University of Maryland Eastern Shore.
Okay.
And then, ironically, I intern with the CIAA as a sophomore in college, and the current commissioner at the time said, come on back home.
Oh, wow.
And I came to the CIAA initially as the PR director, but I advanced to be the number two person, the associate commissioner for the CIAA.
It remained shows you really team. Worked your way up.
Yeah, I did. And it was not a plan situation. It was more you work, people see, and I had favor. But I did work hard. And some of the things that I worked hard to do didn't have to be that hard if I saw someone else doing it. So that's why I try to bring people on that have had some success. But I like to call it significance, because many of the women are doing is not just for success in the sense of monetarily entitled. They're doing it to make a significant impact on the student athletes that they serve. And when you have a service mentality, all other things fall into place. And that's just basically, I left the CIAA in 2013. I had been doing consulting since 2005. Doing Title IX education around the country.
Right.
The one thing that I'm really known for, which is, it didn't mean to come out that way, many of the women that were SWAs or associate ADs in the CIAA have advanced on to become athletic directors.
Wow, so, and that's huge. I mean, one of the athletic directors.
Yes. Like I just mentioned, Ingrid Ricky McCree. I've known her since she was a volleyball coach. And
wow.
She had leadership skills. She was the president of Volleyball Coach Association. She was on NCAA committees. And so I had the position to be able to put her on some conference committees.
Right.
And so from there, people get a chance to see, oh, you know, if your institution is not honoring your leadership skills, if a
right.
conference office puts you in positions that will highlight what you're known for, what you can be able to bring to the table, then the institution will begin to acknowledge that. And I've seen that when male AD may depart, female SWA becomes the interim. And
right.
that took a lot of work to create that mindset that this is the number two person. It's the highest ranking female in your
right.
department. She might not be the highest ranking person in the athletic department because you could have a male. But
right.
the point is that you have a female that's on executive decision-making body of athletic department.
Okay.
So that being said, you have Ingrid Ricky McCree at North Carolina Central. You have Peggy Davis at Virginia State. You have Dee Ford Key at Mississippi Valley State University. You did have Denisha Hendricks at Chicago State.
Wow. So truly across the country.
Yes. And I'm just trying to duplicate what I did within the CIAA nationally.
Wow, I mean, that's so great. And I love that, you know, you're really pushing women into these positions, because I know I went to University of Maryland for undergrad, where we had a male AD, Kevin Anderson, and then at Georgetown University, where I went for grad school, we had another male AD, Lee Reed. And, of course, they both, you know, do great jobs in their particular positions, but I don't think we see enough female ADs. I just kind of want to hear from you. I mean, you say that, you know, the ceiling is being pushed and it's being moved, but, I mean, where do you think we need to get to where, as you say, you know, all athletic departments will consider women for that top coveted athletic director spot in their collegiate athletic departments?
Well, you know, again, you asked some real great questions, and I'm glad to be able to say that I was surprised. I had two athletic departments to contact me individually to ask me who did I believe would be a good candidate for their position.
Okay.
So that being said, you go and find people who know where to find minority candidates.
Okay.
And you have to be intentional about trying to put them in the pool.
Right.
And so that's why I have labeled myself or marketed myself as a place, because that's why it's called a chat in the garden where significance blooms. So if you want to find the top women of color in athletic administration, this is the place to go.
Right.
And
wow, that's huge, Monique. I don't even know. I mean, it's like you're doing something so great, you know, giving these athletic departments. I think you're right. I think you bring up an important point that maybe sometimes they just don't know, you know, how to go about getting that particular candidate to make sure they do have a diverse pool when they're looking at, you know, that next AD. And, you know, we talked about athletic directors, and I just think back to when I was at Georgetown, Monique, in the sports industry management program that I graduated from. I went to school with so many men and women who have hopes and goals of being athletic directors. So, I mean, what would you say to a young person right now, you know, in college or, you know, working, you know, maybe towards one of those, you know, entry-level athletic department positions, what would you say they need to do to get to that athletic director position to be considered, you know, for that top spot in the future?
Well, you know, I would say I've been blessed with this eye for potential.
Okay.
And I can see it, and it usually looks like someone that shows initiative,
mm-hmm.
who does not look or act like the regular population of students.
Right.
So if you're a student, I don't know you're a student, but you look like you are already on a professional staff,
mm-hmm.
that's the one that's going to be chosen. That's the
right.
one everybody goes, oh, yeah, we want her. And I'll give you a perfect example. When I was given the position at the CIAA, I had to hire an assistant.
Okay.
And I watched this young lady. Now, I happen to be a Hampton University graduate.
Okay. The real issue, right?
well, yeah, I say HIU, so I don't have to. have a debate all day long. So
oh, okay.
H-I-Q.
I like that.
But I remember this young lady that carried herself at the MEAC Championship as if she had purpose.
Okay.
She moved with intention. And I said, I don't know her name. I want her. Because, for one, I knew that we were trained by the same person. That's
right.
Another thing. So if someone can speak on your behalf or can know your work ethic without you even speaking to them,
mm-hmm.
That's what you want. I'll tell you another young lady. I went to MEAC again. I went to go pick up some an item left at the front desk for me. Young lady was a receptionist, and I didn't know that she wasn't a full-time employee. She was a volunteer intern.
Okay.
And so that stuck with me how professionally she handled me. So,
right.
You know, just act as if you want the job that you want. And let us please just put a mute button on can I get paid?
Right, right.
Okay? I mean, let us exhibit professionalism before we get a paycheck.
Mm, so well said. And, you know, I think obviously, right, that paycheck will come, but if you do the work you do, you won't even
yes.
have to worry about it because you'll know it's coming. And other people will want to give it to you because you're doing the work that's needed to be done. So I think that's so well said, Monique. I hope you continue this great work. I'm so excited to see what this new year in 2018 holds for you, and I'm so excited to have you on my show. And with that, Monique, I want to get into it. I always like to start my show with my Doing It Big and the DMV segment. And with you, I want to talk about something that I think doesn't get enough attention here in the DMV area, and that's girls basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I mean, I know you've been in this area for such a long time because you are a Virginia native, and I'm sure it's like when you search for girls basketball, you literally have to search because people are not covering it, and then go to a game, and unfortunately it's not going to be full. I don't know why, but this area, I mean, it's like even though we have great players coming out of this area from girls basketball, people are just not showing it any attention and love. And really quick, I know the Title IX Classic that you used to be a part of that actually just took place the last week of December at the D.C. Armory. They had some great talent there. And, I mean, one school that really, you know, blew everybody's minds, and if you've been following girls basketball, they probably didn't, but that was the Anacostia girls
mm-hmm.
basketball team who actually won and rallied past Bullis. To win that classic, and I mean, a name that everybody needs to remember is Maya Moe, just because, I mean, she basically kept Anacostia in that game. 5'6" guard, led her team with 27 points, Anacostia 9-2, and they were the D.C. Interscholastic Athletic Association champions, but they won their second straight championship at the Title IX Classic in the past 3 years, so obviously, Anacostia is doing something right, and then it speaks volumes that they're able to be the private school in Bullis, who is known to have a good girls basketball team. I would just like to hear your thoughts, Monique, on just the kind of current DMV basketball scene, and then if you could elaborate why the Title IX Classic is so important and why people should go watch the girls basketball talent that plays there each and every year at the end of December.
Well, it's really ironic that you bring that up because that's how we met.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. We were looking for our MC for our tip-off banquet, and I think it's called the Round Ball Report or something.
Yeah, that I did. Mm-hmm.
Well, the gentleman there had I was the education director, so every team had mandatory them for them to sit for 30-minute training of some type, and
okay.
we did media training. And he shared with me that you would be a great candidate to work with us, and I have to say that was one of the best decisions that we made as a committee to have you join.
Oh, well, thank you so much.
Because, again, my company is called Seeds of Empowerment, planting seeds of empowerment to lead others to greatness.
Right.
Now, that was 2015.
Yes.
I talked to you then, and I said, what we need is someone to tell our story. And did you see what you just did?
And I'm so excited that you guys had me a part of the story because it's one that needs to continue to be told.
Yes. Yes. And the fact that you highlighted a young lady and you told their statistics, that's what needs to happen to grow girls basketball.
Right.
It needs to have folks like you to tell the story.
Right.
Because it's just like anything else. Did this tree get cut down? Was it blown down? Okay? Or did it just fall down on its own?
Mm, right.
So who's telling the story? And so that win is a win. It ends up with having some numbers in a newspaper. But how did they get that win is the story that needs to be told. And
right.
That's what Janet Johnson is. This is her ninth one. And she did it as a mother from a kitchen table because she was an AAU mother.
Mm-hmm.
Parent organization were disturbed that their girls weren't getting Division I looks.
Right.
So they created this basketball tournament. And so, again, it's creating and telling the story. And that's what needs to happen. And take some of the tools that are being used across the country, from colleges to the WNBA.
Mm-hmm.
You have to create an experience, not just a game.
Right.
You
got
to be able to, I teach sports marketing at Hampton University. I'm an adjunct professor. So
okay.
I teach sports marketing, PR. And with that, I say you're selling an experience. And, high school games are usually filled with parents and know the kids. Okay?
Right.
So
right.
What you have to do is you got to get the community to know the kids, too, that are not even didn't know the child from birth. So how do you do that? You get them out there signing posters,
mm-hmm.
The standard reading
Great.
Book, that's fine. But, the kid wants to say, I want to go see Sally Sue.
Right.
Because Sally Sue read me a book.
Right.
So it's not just a game. It's being able to touch a community and be able to say, I want to be.
Right.
I know we're talking about basketball, but you think about, and I'm so sorry that this show is not going to continue. Remember the show Pitch?
Yes. Oh, my gosh, with Jenny Baker. I love
yes.
that show. I was so mad it got canceled, Monique.
Me too. Oh, and see, I told you I'm binge-watching The White Shadow.
Okay.
And so you have no idea what The White Shadow is.
I was just about to ask you what that was. That is one I do not know.
Well, let me just give you this short little history. So you're talking about D.C.
Okay.
So Kevin Hooks, who plays Thorpe on The White Shadow, happens to meet my cousin. His father grew up in the D.C. area. His name is Robert Hooks.
Okay.
And so he's a star in this 1978 TV show that has a basketball team in L.A. And
okay.
the head coach is white. And he comes, and he's a former NBA player. He comes and saves the day. But the storylines that are in there, it's more than just basketball. And so the combination of that in my head, plus what I just said about Pitch,
mm-hmm.
when a young girl sees who they can be, they might not even thought about being playing baseball, but they see
right.
that now.
It's all about the visibility, right? They see
yes.
it.
Yes. That's
wow.
it.
I mean,
so
I love that you brought up
it.
I love that you brought up Pitch because I'm like you. I thought it was such a great show. I actually went to the D.C. premiere here.
Ooh.
I thought it was going to have a big following, but unfortunately, as we see, when I was canceled, people weren't watching. And it's funny because I would tweet about the show on Twitter. They do the hashtags of it. And there were so many negative comments. Like, Monique, people would be like, oh, there will never be a girl, in the major leagues. I mean, people were just saying so many things. So it's like some people didn't even said they didn't even want their daughters to see that because they said it wasn't realistic. That's how negative, unfortunately, stuff has gotten. And as you said, it's all about visibility, and why can't? Jenny Baker was a perfect example, and I think women need to see that now that they truly can do anything. And then, of course, it wouldn't be weird to somebody growing up if they see it. If you can see that show from a young age, then guess what? When you get older, it wouldn't be weird, if there was another woman playing in the Major League Baseball. And that's what I think. It's all about the visibility and opening. So I hope, Fox did give it a chance. So I will give them a little credit for that. But I hope they will give it a chance, even if they bring back another different show kind of like that one. But I think we all need to see that. And I love that you referenced that back to basketball, Monique, because as you said, it's sad, but it's like every single year we have the discussion, especially since I cover WNBA, and it's like, why is it always the same, couple of media members there? Girls basketball, same thing. It's always less people, than it is at the men's game. But I think you're right. It's getting the community used to it because guess what? Those reporters that are covering the game, they grew up in the community. So guess what? You have to expose them from a young age so when they go in those newsrooms, they can say why it's important to send, reporters to the different women's and girls' games going on in the area and in the community. And I think you gave such a great story about Ms. Janice Johnson, about why this classic is so important, because those girls should have the same look. You want them to have looks at D1 schools and, you know, every other school, so they have an opportunity. And the young lady, Maya, I mean, she's doing incredible, incredible, incredible things at Anacostia. She had help of Zakiya Leonard, who also added 16 points as they won over Bullis 58-50. But now I just kind of want to break it down, Monique, more into the classic that featured strong programs from throughout the D.C., Maryland, and Virginia areas, across the country as well. But, of course, we're going to focus here on the DMV area. Riverdale Baptist, which is a school that a lot of people should have heard of in the DMV, they actually took down National Christian on their way to winning the Summit bracket. And then Good Counsel actually triumphed over ISL to power Georgetown Visitation to win the Green bracket. And then, of course, Anacostia, they actually got to blow, they actually beat two private schools, which is huge, and a school in New York that has really kind of been their foe to win the Sandler bracket. So that was great. And then just I want to give some rankings of the top girls basketball programs here in the DMV area. Sorry, go ahead, Monique.
Before you go to that, can you tell me, I'm going to put you on the spot for a second, because I was not able to go to the town.
Me either. Honestly, this is luckily, thank gosh, I actually knew some of the people that was able to go down, because I actually wasn't either, because I was actually on vacation that week with my family in Baltimore for the holiday.
Well, my question is, I know Riverdale won. Would you happen to be able to tell me what Martino did, how she did, how many points she had?
That I do not have. I wish I did have that for you. But I definitely will look that up, just because, I mean, and I love that you're asking these questions, because that's the questions people should ask, because as we've been talking about on this show, Monique, everyone should have some type of, you know, knowledge of what the girls' basketball teams are doing for these schools, as well as the men. And I'm sure, like you, each and every year, you want to see more and more people come down to the D.C. Armory, which is easy to get to, driving, it's metro accessible, it's pretty much the easiest thing, especially with the children on winter break, to come see some great basketball, mm-hmm. you know, that's going down. You have these huge private schools taking on, you know, schools in the area, and it's, you know, really competitive. And right now the rankings, St. John's is actually 10-1. They're ranked number one in the area. They have a freshman, Azzy Feud, who led the cadets with 29 points and 5 steals. So she's definitely someone to look out for. Then Riverdale Baptist, which we mentioned, they're actually number 3. They're 10-3. Mm-hmm. Right now, the Crusaders were able to slip by National Christian in the semifinals mm-hmm. of the Summit bracket at the Title IX Classic, and they actually finished off South Shore from New York to take home the title. And then right under them, we have Rock Creek Christian at number 4. They had 18 points from New Washington, and the Eagles were able to blow by Mary Lewis Academy. And then Howard, we have at number 5 at 8-0, a local school from Virginia, T.C. Williams, mm-hmm. Coming in at number 6. Herndon at number 7. We have Georgetown Visitation at number 8. And then from Montgomery County, where I'm from, Poolsville came in at number 9. They're 9-0, and they really proved that they can compete with teams from any county. They actually took down Battlefield in Wise at the Ron Engel Classic to stay undefeated. Bishop McNamara, PG County School, came in at number 10. Longreach at number 11. Tuscarora at number 12. National Christian, number 13. 14 was Loudoun County, Richard Montgomery at 15, Oxon Hill 16, Holy Child 17, Marshall 18, Anacostia at 19 at 9-2, and Parkdale at number 20. So basically, I mean, as I just went through the top 20 schools, I mean, lots of good girls basketball coming on mm-hmm. In the area. So I hope people continue to support. But now, Monique, I want to transition into my Kelsey's Across the Nation segment. And I want to talk about something that I'm sure you've got a lot of questions about, and that's the sexual assault in the Me Too movement that's happening. And specifically, I want to talk about it in sports. So I want to bring up one example before I let you chime in. But one of the ones that really stood out to me that I haven't had a chance yet to talk about on my show was actually about a California woman who worked for a sports marketing firm that was led by Hall of Fame quarterback Warren Moon. She actually filed a sexual harassment lawsuit alleging that the retired football star actually required her to wear a thong underwear and share his bed during business trips. Now, she filed this lawsuit back in early December in Orange County, California, and she alleged that Moon, who is now 61, committed sexual battery by grabbing the woman's crotch during a trip to Seattle. That was back in 2017. Then the suit also accuses Moon of pulling off the woman's bathing suit after slipping a drug into her drink during a separate trip to Mexico in October. Now, of course, Moon's company isn't pretty much responding to any of these things, but the plaintiff, whose name is Wendy Haskell, who's 32, she was hired as an assistant, executive assistant for Moon's company back in July, and she pretty much traveled with him on a weekly basis for speaking engagements, charity events, and, you know, personal appearances that he was doing, according to the lawsuit. But it actually said that she was demoted by the firm in October after she complained about Moon's sexual advances. And, of course, this is just one of many that we've all been hearing with the sexual assault and the Me Too movement. So I just kind of want to hear your thoughts on what's going on now and why you think now it's just kind of gaining national attention, even though many people have known this has been going on for years and years and decades.
Well, Ms. Nelson.
Take as much time as you want.
As I share with
you,
because
it's a serious issue.
I have been in this business for now 28 years.
Okay.
I was a 22-year-old person as a sports information director on
mm-hmm.
a college campus.
Okay.
I was 28 as athletic director, female, and there were none like me.
Mm-hmm.
I will share this. I did share this in my class. And let me ask you this. This situation with Mr. Moon?
Yes.
Is that something that happened this year?
Last year. Well, 2017, yes.
Okay. It is ironic because when I tell young ladies what I had to go through,
mm-hmm.
they look at me like, why didn't you do something?
Mm.
You know, and it's hardly for me to comprehend, especially with opportunity to tape record and to do different things to avoid.
Right.
I'm not saying that I'm discrediting this
mm-hmm.
By no means,
okay.
But I just know, and even in the conference office, I've had young ladies who tell me certain things, and I would intervene. And not a direct manner, but
right.
in a manner that would get it known that I know that you know.
Mm-hmm.
And if I know and you don't stop, other people are going to know.
Right.
So for me, I had to come with different tactics.
Okay.
And my very first meeting as a SID back in 1990 of August, I was always very supportive with all of my other SIDs, and they were all males, and they were all say, take this job, and it's going to be great. So
right.
I go to my very first SID meeting, and everybody hugs me and says, great. I think it was the end of the day.
Okay.
And someone, a male SID, who's no longer a SID,
mm-hmm.
but still living, stuck his tongue in my ear.
Wow.
And I didn't know what to do. I was scared to death.
Right.
And I was like, so now I'm not a student. That means I'm fair game. Is everybody going to do that to me? Oh, my goodness. So I didn't tell not a single soul. I just told my students for the first time this fall to make a point. And they all were like, why don't you slap him? I'm like, slap him? I mean, you don't understand.
Right.
You know. So I get the fact that what normal people say, why didn't you just do? When
mm-hmm.
you're in the midst of it, you're trying
right.
to. It's like paddling not to drown. I'm
exactly.
just trying to stay above water. So what I did, now I don't have that problem now because I'm
right.
50 years old. But
right.
at 22,
mm-hmm.
whenever I got off on the elevator, I always got off on a different floor than I was staying in. And I took the steps to my room. I never told anybody ever what room I was in. And then when the academic year, I always had student assistants. Student assistants were always with me.
Right.
Whether male or female. Because people would gather in hotel rooms and whatnot. And I was not going to miss out on the camaraderie, but I would take somebody with me. So there's strategies that people have taken over years. And you
right.
do that because you want to get ahead. And that now for me now, there would be, and that's just a real small incident, but there's no need for me at this time to bring out anything on someone unless it's going to keep it from happening to someone else.
Right.
That's the only reason why I believe the Me Too, if it's going
it's
to
happening.
Help someone else. Now, I did read an article about someone saying that not only that, if something happened to you before and you didn't tell your male family members, now when they hear you tell it, it makes them more aware of how to act.
Okay.
And I thought that was very interesting. He says, you know, now I am real cautious of the conversations that are like locker room conversations when we're not in a locker room, if you know what I mean.
Right.
You know, it's like you need to say that's inappropriate, that you don't say that.
And I think you're right.
Says it to a male,
right?
Then you made some progress.
Right. Because it's not just coming from a woman like us, right? It's coming
right.
from another male. And I think that's what this movement, Monique, is doing, because I think, and as you said, I really don't like when people judge, because you can never say, well, why didn't you do it then? You never know what a person can do because you're not in their shoes. And, of course, I mean, you know, a lot of this stuff happens, and people don't understand this stuff can be very traumatic. Of course, no one asked for this to happen to them. And I'm sure there's a lot more stories, but it also takes courage to come out, because think about it. You know there's going to be a lot of negativity, and there's going to be naysayers, especially when you're saying this against somebody in power. And that's what we're seeing a lot of these stories come out against. And again, a lot of these women, you know, the jobs that they were in, you know, they were scared for fearful of losing their income and the way that they make a living. So I think that's why we're seeing this. But as you said, I mean, I think now people are coming out so it doesn't happen again. And now that I think women are seeing these men, you know, repercussions, we're seeing people get suspended, we're seeing people get fired. You know, it just shows that obviously wrong is wrong and it's always been wrong, but now at least people see something's happening. And as you said now, I think men are kind of having that conversation too, not just hearing it from women, but they're hearing it from other men like, you know, hey, that's not cool. Don't say that. And, you know, people are starting to refresh, you know, how you should act around other people. You know, so they're comfortable, and then, of course, you're comfortable, because no one should ever feel uncomfortable, ever, but especially at a workplace environment.
Well, I had a male AD to ask me a strange question. This is when, you know, I had the privilege of being at board meetings and being at almost all of the different association meetings, and one AD said, because he was just getting a female president, so the blessing to be around presidents and to see how they perform from a leadership role really enhances my ability to be a leadership strategist for athletic departments, athletic administrators, because I have access to the thought process.
Right.
And so he said something. Now, you're going to really laugh at this, but he was so sincere. Because, again, it's about age and about your exposure. He said, should I wear cologne when I meet with her? And I just wanted to hug him. I'm like, honey, that ain't got
right.
nothing to do with nothing. You know what
right.
I mean?
Right, right.
I mean, do you need cologne?
Right, that's a personal thing, right?
Right, you know. So,
wow.
I mean, but again, it's diversity and inclusion. It's like you bring your experiences. Now,
right.
what you have to bring to the table is a willingness for your point of view to be expanded.
Right.
Expanded. And so that is, if you're going to shut somebody off and say, oh, like, here she comes with all of this, or
right.
here he comes with all of this, then you're going to continue to have a narrow view of society, and you're not going to grow, and you're going to, the path that you're is narrow is going to get narrower, and you can't walk down that path anymore. You're going to be stuck.
Right, right. I think that's the biggest thing, like you said. I think, you know, us, and then we need to talk about it. I think now, you know, it's finally not a hush-hush issue. You know, it's not something that people are scared to talk about. It's being talked about. You know, with that, I want to transition, Monique, into my biggest headlines in sports, to another thing that was really talked about in 2017 through my 2017 rewind of sports and politics. We saw a lot more athletes talking on political issues, and that's something that for a long time I've always said sports and politics go hand in hand, but I think finally now it kind of made the limelight, and now, you know, you had athletes being very front-spoken about things that were going on in this country. So I'm just going to quickly run down the year and just kind of give the biggest examples that we saw of athletes, you know, really speaking their minds. So I'm going to start winding it back to February 7th of last year, when Steph Curry actually spoke his mind after Under Armour founder Kevin Plank said in a CNBC interview, he actually referred to President Trump as a real asset for the country. Now, Steph Curry, on the other end, said, I agree with that description. He basically told actually a Bay Area columnist, Marcus Thompson, he said, if you remove the ET from asset. So obviously that kind of set his opinions of it. And then that actually, though, kicked off a day-long interaction between Curry and Under Armour. And basically Curry issued a public statement saying that he did actually plan to still stay on with Under Armour, even though he disagreed with Kevin Plank. But he said as long as the company basically feels to be in tune with his personal values. So basically, it seemed like he was saying, you know, he didn't like what Under Armour said, but of course he was able to still talk about, you know, his feelings of what was going on in the country. And then I'm going to go forward to March 30th when North Carolina was actually making all the news. And if you remember, this is when the state legislature repealed and replaced its bathroom bill, which had required individuals in government buildings to use bathrooms corresponding to the sex on their birth certificates, which many people consider to be discriminant against transgender people. The passage of the original bill prompted the NBA to strip Charlotte of the 2017 All-Star Game, which cost them an estimated $100 million in revenue. So, of course, if you remember, then the All-Star Game actually went to New Orleans last year because of the bathroom bill controversy in Charlotte. And then Steph Curry, again, actually, who was raised in Charlotte, actually had spoken out against the bill again, and he was in favor of inclusion. And I'm going to go ahead to May 4th when Greg Popovich actually vented, which if you watch sports, Greg Popovich venting should be no surprise, but in a news conference before game one of the Western Conference Finals against the Warriors, the Spurs head coach responded to a question from the Chronicle about whether national events can be distracting. He said, usually things happen in the world and you go to work. And you got your family and you got your friends and you do what you do, he said. But to this day, I feel like there's a cloud, a pall over the whole country in a paranoid, surreal sort of way. It's got nothing to do with the Democrats losing the election. It's got to do with the way one individual conducts himself, and that's embarrassing. It's dangerous to our institution and what we all stand for and what we expect the country to be. Now, he was among the coaches like Warriors coach Steve Kerr and then Pistons coach Stan Van Gundy, who are pretty much one of the three coaches who are the most outspoken critics of the president and the political climate. So just from those examples, Monique, I mean, why do you think we're seeing more, last year we saw more athletes, you know, begin to speak, and coaches speak more about their political views, and do you think this is good for sports?
Well, I'm excited about it. Okay. I have been using Dave Zirin's book,
yes.
What's My Name Fool?
Mm-hmm.
He's from D.C.
Right, yeah, Dave Zirin. Mm-hmm.
And that's based, What's My Name Fool is what Muhammad Ali said to a reporter who refused to call him by Muhammad Ali and kept calling him Cassius Clay.
Cassius, right. Mm-hmm.
And so what we're seeing now is, as the Bible says, there's nothing new under the sun. But it is, the sun is more bright, and
okay.
I'm excited about that. Because when I was a social commissioner with the Seattle Blade, that's when right before Obama took office, and
right.
I was saying to the young folks, do you understand that when we have a Republican in-house, they question the Title IX law? If we have a Democrat, they go and explore those cases that come about.
Okay.
And I said, now, do you understand that student-athletes, that you could maybe lose the opportunities that you have now? So most of my male student-athletes knew what Title IX was, and the girls didn't. So I said, okay,
right.
Let me get them to understand that if you are the man and the female on campus now, whatever you say and bring attention to, you're going to be able to take the masses on campus. So you have a platform. Again, I want
right.
you to see. This is 2007 that I was having this conversation.
Right, right.
And so Dave Zirin and I, we traveled to all the CAA schools, and
okay.
we did a workshop on how to use the platform and the different other student, I mean, not student athletes, but other athletes who use their platform. So fast forward,
mm-hmm.
I'm sitting in class at Hampton University, and Kaepernick takes a knee, I'm going like, yeah.
Right.
You know, I'm going like, this is what I've been talking about.
Right.
And, you know, it's not like saying no in the art, but I'm just saying, I'm going like, somebody else is seeing what I'm seeing. And so for me, it's necessary. And it's not necessarily about sports. It's the fact that student athletes or students are recognizing they have a brand.
Right.
And so when you have a brand, people follow you. And when people follow you, what do you have to say that can impact their lives?
Right.
And I get it that, yeah, you get a win, and that's great, and people who wear the same emblem that you wear, that gives them pride at home. But what else can you give folks? Can you give people hope? Can you give them some knowledge base? You know, that's one reason why you got the cleat piece, you know, with the – I think that's wonderful because
mm-hmm.
the NFL, the problem that the players had was that, okay – you give to what you want to give to, but you're not honoring anybody that reflects my values. So they allowed them to do the cleat piece for their own self-value. And I think that was a not significant compromise, but one that let individuality and be able to say, this is what's important to my community.
Right, and they were able to showcase that.
Right. So when you tell folks, okay, you're going to but breast cancer is close to my heart. My mother's a survivor.
Okay.
But when you only say this is the only thing we're going to give to and I need you to go out there and sign these and do that, you're not giving people – this is where inclusion comes in, okay?
Right.
The
right.
inclusion of thought and what your value system, what's important to you.
Mm.
It's funny though, in class we talked about let's say that we in on California side.
Okay.
And we want to recognize and we in Oakland and we want to recognize the founders of the Black Panthers.
Mhm.
But case in point, those owners would probably say that is too controversial.
Right. Right.
But mind you, some of them folks might have benefited from the breakfast that the Black Panthers gave. They might not have seen the things that they have seen, but experienced the social causes that they brought to the community where they were. So again, it's about perspective and your narrow view versus a wider view,
mm-hmm.
and that's where this is all coming from.
You know, I think you make such great points, Monique. I mean, especially the Colin Kaepernick one, because, of course, I mean, I think Colin Kaepernick, Monique, became a household name in 2017.
Yeah.
If you're a sports fan, you already knew him. I remember Colin Kaepernick when he almost defeated the Baltimore Ravens in the Super Bowl in New Orleans when the lights went out when Beyonce was performing.
Yeah.
But, you know, now it's like he got, I mean, just think about the stuff that he was recognized for after taking a knee and really kind of starting the movement in the National Football League and really that touched other sports. He was named GQ's Magazine Citizen of the Year. He received Sports Illustrated Muhammad Ali Legacy Award. He was given the Southern California ACLU Ethan Monroe Courageous Advocate Award. I mean, that spoke a lot. And then if you want to talk about the end of last year, I mean, when the election was going on in Alabama, Charles Barkley, of course, the former NBA player, who is also a former Republican, actually spoke at the Election Eve rally for Democratic senatorial candidate Doug Jones, who was running against Roy Moore, who had actually said that America was a better place under slavery. And Barkley, who is an Alabama native, you know, told fellow Alabamians, he said, "Stop looking like idiots to the nation. We're not a bunch of idiots." So that's what Charles Barkley said. So, we saw athletes, you know, speaking and really affecting, I think, you know, what was happening in politics. And then in November, Marshawn Lynch made President Trump's, you could say he made his naughty list because the day after the Raiders running back sat out the national anthem at a game in Mexico City, President Trump actually tweeted, "Great disrespect. Next time the NFL should suspend him for the remainder of the season. Attendance and ratings way down." So, again, we saw sports and politics going hand in hand and pretty much affecting each other. And then I'm sorry, go ahead.
Let me say this. Now, let's be very clear.
Mm-hmm.
Sports and politics include sacrifice.
Yes.
And so that's what all these individuals that you have mentioned. And
right.
One of my heroes, and I got his book, I'm looking right at it right this minute, is John Carlos.
Okay, yeah.
I've met him, and I told him, thank you for your sacrifice. And I told his wife.
Right.
Thank you for your sacrifice. Again, I have been on this, tooting this horn for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And with Kaepernick, he kind of knew that he was not going to be, he was going to be a free agent.
Right.
So it was strategic. But I
right.
don't believe he didn't think he was not going to be picked up. But
right.
he said, okay, well, I might not be the starting quarterback if I get traded. I better use this platform while I can because I won't be here. So he knew
right.
that.
Right.
But he didn't know it was going to turn out like this.
No, because he still wants to play.
Hmm?
I said exactly right, because he still wants to play. But right, I think you're right. He was strategic in when he started it.
Right.
But then, of course, I mean, nobody, I don't think anybody could have saw,
right.
you know, everything that happened since then.
Yeah, and the same thing with John Carlos, Tommy Smith, they were banned, Muhammad Ali.
Right,
you know,
before him, yep.
Yeah, he was not able to box in the United States. He had to do the HBCU speaking circuit.
Yep.
There are sacrifices when you stand up for what you believe in. And so,
right. Exactly right. I mean, that history has shown that time and time and time again. And
mm-hmm.
then I just think last year, though, was just a perfect example of, you know, us seeing it in sports. I mean, because then another example, Monique, I remember in November, and you probably remember this one really well, when UCLA freshman LiAngelo Ball and his two teammates were arrested in China, remember, for the shoplifting. And they were detained for a week at the team's hotel, and then they were released and sent home. On Twitter, you know, President Trump claimed he basically negotiated their release with Chinese president, but he said he wondered if the players would thank him. But then LeVar Ball, LiAngelo Ball's dad, actually declined to thank President Trump. And then the president actually tweeted, I should have left them in jail. So, again, we saw sports and politics going, you know, hand in hand. And I mean, President Trump even tweeted, it was me, and he called LeVar Ball an ungrateful fool. But then, you know, LeVar later claimed that he sent President Trump three pairs of the Big Baller brand shoes, which actually retail at $4.95. So, you know, that whole thing, and if you remember this, the CNN interview, you know, that was just seemed like back and forth yelling. And then in October, Monique, of last year, we had NFL.
Let me speak on that one.
Okay.
That's not sport and politics. That's marketer versus marketer.
Oh, I agree with that because, you know,
yeah.
why, yes, LeVar Ball is a huge marketer. But I say sports, obviously, because, I mean, it made news, of course, because of the initial act of the shoplifting.
Yeah, yeah,
and that's
yeah.
why I say sport. But, yes, I mean, I think we all know the CNN interview. I mean, literally, it was free press for Big Baller Brand. LeVar Ball continues,
and
I think, the Big Baller Brand. He continues to grow, and he continues to get, I think, you know, powerful people on his side when they allow him a platform.
And for the president.
Right.
I mean,
right.
It was a boxing match versus two marketers. That's what
yes.
all that was.
Two of the best marketers
right.
in the game right now.
Right.
And that's why we saw that whole, you know, that whole thing play out. And everybody, you know, saw that happening. And then I went to go to October because if you remember, some NFL players and owners met in New York to discuss the player protests, which had been brought back from, of course, President Trump's when he called them SOBs. During a rally, and then the Texans owner Bob McNair actually made the point that the protesters, he said, are hurting business. He actually said, we can't have the inmates running the prison. And then he did apologize for the prisoners' part. But then, of course, we saw some Texans players not show up to practice because of that comment. I mean, a lot of people were very mad that the Texans owner said that. So, again, we saw, you know, sports and politics going hand in hand. And then in October also, longtime ESPN analyst Mike Ditka actually he wanted to basically, I think, show that the network wasn't completely liberal like a lot of people want to say, and he actually said that protesting players should be told adios. He said they're not only disrespectful, he said they're barking up a dead tree, and he actually said there has been no oppression in the last 100 years that I know of. So that's what he told to Jim Gray. And then also in October, and Monique basically was a busy month in 2017, we saw an Indianapolis Vice President Mike Pence and his wife walk out of the stadium prior to the 49ers-Colts games after some players took a knee. Do you remember that one?
Yeah, I do.
And then you know,
I actually kind of like tune out NFL.
You don't even watch it, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Was it because of the protests that were happening,
yeah,
or just?
I watch people, and so there's no Michael Vick, and my husband's a 49er fan, and so I'm a 49er fan, and I'm like, oh, okay, that's what's happening. Oh, okay, that's fine. I just didn't watch, didn't pay attention.
Wow. Well, quickly then, I just want to run through some of the other big, things that happened in sports last year. I think that really showed sports and politics going hand in hand. I mentioned the President Trump's SOB's comment earlier, but after he said that, the Sunday before he said that, it was only about four players that actually staged a protest. Because if you remember, the kneeling of the knee, it kept going down each week,
mm-hmm.
I think, as we saw more backlash. But that Sunday after he said that comment, more than 300 players protested.
Mm-hmm.
So again, we see, you know, and actually, 49ers President Jed York called President Trump's SOB remarks callous and offensive. So we saw that happen. And then also in September, A's rookie catcher Bruce Maxwell became the first major league player to protest the anthem by taking a knee. So remember, we hadn't really seen this in baseball. So again,
yeah.
And this was after President Trump's comment that he made back on September 22nd when he made the SOB comment and basically said, you know, they should be fired. And then, of course, we saw the Warriors basically decline. Actually, they said they didn't even get an invitation. But they had said it's after they won the championship, right, that, of course, we all know the teams usually go to the White House. And I've actually covered teams going to the White House. And, you know, some players we've seen time and time again now with political beliefs. I mean, when I was there, I remember when the Cubs went and Jake Arrieta didn't go when President Obama was still in the White House. But then the Warriors team, basically their whole team decided not to go. Just because basically, you know, sports and politics. And then the last example I want to bring up from last year was Jemele Hill actually getting
mm-hmm.
suspended, if you remember, and I know you know this one, from ESPN, you know, after she called President Trump a white supremacist. And he actually, you know, tweeted and called out for the network that she should apologize for the untruth and basically called on her to get fired.
Yeah.
So time and time again last year, you know, we saw these examples again of sports and politics meshing and really, you know, creating an uproar for everyone to see. But, I mean, that's just some of the examples. I couldn't bring up everything, Monique, or we would run out of time on the show.
So something that just crossed my mind when you told me about Ms. Hill.
Yes.
On a bright spot,
mm-hmm.
University of Virginia hired the very first African-American female athletic director.
Yes.
In the shadow, we came to the bright light of what happened in Charlottesville.
Right, Charlottesville, right.
Right, yeah, Charlottesville in the fall. And
right.
I think that's, again, when you have an opportunity to be able to use your platform to not necessarily change minds, but broaden minds, that's what you have to do.
And I think that's what we saw. I think that's a perfect example because, of course, how could any of us forget what happened in Charlottesville with them clashing? We had the protesters. We had the rioters. We had them. We actually had a young woman, unfortunately, lose her life in Charlottesville after being ran over by a vehicle. But I think what you said was right. And then UVA as a whole, I remember their football players, you know, basically said, we don't condone this act. And they actually displayed a sign of unity after what happened. They all, you know, locked arms and showed, you know, we stand together. And I think you're right. I think we saw the athletic department at UVA, you know, do that in response. But just to show that, you know, there's no division and that they truly do want to bring everybody together. So hopefully, you know, it'll be interesting to see this year how we see sports and politics collide because, of course, we know it'll happen time and time again. And I think especially this year more so in the NFL, and not just the NFL, but all leagues, I think, you know, we'll continue to see athletes stand up and have a voice. But I always make the point, too, that I think we don't see it enough, Monique, because a lot of athletes, too, are worried that, you know, they might be like Kaepernick, of course, and lose their jobs. And, of course, athletes are always worried about endorsement money and, you know, all that stuff. Because we saw the CEO, former CEO of Papa John's, you know, make his comment about the players kneeling. And then there was actually backlash when he said pizza sales were down because of the players kneeling. And then it was proven that Papa John's sales were actually down even before that. So basically, you know, people didn't like that. And then now he had to step down as CEO, and now he's just the chairman. So time and time again, you know, we see these examples. But now, Monique, I want to go to a more positive note. I want to talk about some of the women athletes to watch in 2018. So the first girl that I want to talk about is Mommy Bimey, 17 years old, the first black woman to qualify for the 2018 U.S. Olympic speed skating team. Now, I've talked about her on my show before, but what she's doing, and she actually lives out in Virginia. I mean, just wow. I mean, what she did. And I just love her story, Monique, about how she was basically too fast to skate for figure skating, which is what she initially wanted to do. And now she'll be the first black woman to qualify for the 2018 U.S. Olympic speed skating team. So what are your thoughts on her and, you know, what's next for her in this 2018 year?
Well, I didn't know she was in Virginia. I did post that in our private Facebook group.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, again, that's a growth mindset, you know.
Right.
She didn't get exactly what she wanted, which is a fixed mindset. If I can't do this, I'm stopping there. The
right.
growth mindset is one, okay, let me see how else I can go about achieving this goal. And I think that is the way we have to approach any type of crisis, because a crisis really is an opportunity.
Oh, I think that was so well said. You know, so that's just one example. And as you said, you know, she took the first thing, you know, that she was too fast, but she turned, I think, love that she turned kind of a negative into a positive, and now
mm-hmm.
she's the first. And guess what? Now she's opened a doorway, and I hope there'll be many more after her,
because
yeah. She's truly making history. And then women just are, I think, are continued to make noise in 2018, because then we have veteran sailor Leah Ditton, who is setting out in early spring to become the third person and first woman to cross the North Pacific Ocean from Japan to San Francisco by herself.
Oh, wow.
So, again, we have women, you know, making a difference and really making their impact in sports. And then we have a skateboarder, Nora, who actually became the first female professional skateboarder to ink a sponsorship deal with Adidas. And she'll actually defend her Vans Park Series world title in 2018. So there we go again. You know, sports, but on the money side, the first mm-hmm. skateboarder to get a deal with Adidas. So, again, women opening doors for others, because it always takes a first, I think, to open that door. And then another person, Canadian slopestyle snowboarder, Spencer O'Brien, will not let her rheumatoid arthritis that she has hinder her gold medal Olympic dreams this year at the Olympic Games. So, basically, a woman, you know, who was told that her rheumatoid arthritis might end her career, she's not letting that in, and she still, you know, has hopes and goals, Monique, of bringing home that gold medal to the U.S., which I think is just wonderful.
Yeah. You
I mean,
got just stuff
it's
I didn't
a year
know
of
about.
I mean, Forbes, I got it from Forbes. Forbes had such a great list, and I love this because I think you need that inspiration. And I love Monique at the beginning of the year giving these stories, you know,
mm-hmm.
as people try to continue their resolutions that they made, to just show
yeah.
you truly, you know, can do anything. And I don't want it to just be a resolution that you write down. I want people to follow their dreams, because, of course, these women had a dream, and now they're accomplishing it. And then on the other side, not just, you know, athletes, but on the business side,
yeah.
I mean, we have women just continuing to rise as executives and influencers in sports. We have a woman, Sophie Goldschmidt, who is the World Surfing League CEO. And then we have a woman, the National Lacrosse League CMO, Ashley Dabb. And then again, we have Commissioner Andrea Williams, who's going to help and dramatically shape the Big Sky Conference. She's trying to make that a national powerhouse. But we also have women executives in sports, you know, continuing.
She's been on
my
show.
Oh, well, there you go. Perfect.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, these women are truly making a difference. And I always like to end my show, Monique, with my Woman Crush Everyday segment. And I want to go back to the Me Too movement, because there was a woman whose article I read last week that just really touched me. And her name is Lisa Olson. And
mm-hmm.
she wrote an article in The Athletic. That's an online publication. And basically she said the Me Too movement comes to sports a reckoning long overdue. Now, she has experience in being a sports reporter, so she's kind of seen everything firsthand, but I want to read this paragraph that stuck out to me at the beginning of the article. She said, there's a famous line every female inevitably learns when she enters the world of sports. Check your dignity at the door. From mm-hmm. a young age, girls are told to not make trouble, and if those girls yearn for a career in sports, they might as well write that adage on the back of their hand. Forget your dignity, keep your head down, and you'll get along fine. If you're extremely lucky, you might even go an entire season without an incident that demeans or belittles you, makes you feel as if you barely exist. And that really, I mean, stood out to me, because I think so so many women who want to get in sports. I'm pretty sure you've heard some type of message like this, you know, from other women or even men, you know, basically like, you know, don't be that too loud of a female. I've even heard, you know, I've actually, Monique, even had someone tell me, you know, don't be the first one to ask a question in a press conference because you're a woman. I've actually had that told to me. So I think far too often, you know, young women are learning in sports, unfortunately, you know, not to stand out too much. Don't be noticed or, you know, only do what you're told. So I'm just kind of curious, you know, what are your thoughts on this? Because basically the rest of the article, she said, you know, that cannot be the mindset that we're teaching our young girls. And, you know, that's why this Me Too movement, she said, is kind of late. It should have been happened, especially in the sports world.
Well, again, that's what, you know, happens when you get in the third or fourth grade, you're told that you're not told, but somehow or another you're assimilated to think, let me not be the smartest person in the room.
Right, right.
And you just want to be included and be in the mixture.
Right.
And if you have the gumption to fight that urge to just want to be like everybody else.
Right.
And actually, to be very honest with you, it's going to take those with the gumption that doesn't want to be like everybody else to be in sports.
Right.
I will say that there's a lot of people out there. And now when I tell my students, I say, look, what is your competitive edge? Because of the fact that this is a competitive world in athletic administration and in sports. Because, again, my undergrad degree was in mass media. I was a sports information director. But then I did jump to full administration. And when you know that, if you're trying to have a competitive edge, you can't be worried about being like everybody else. So
right.
you have to be able to stand out. Now,
right.
the key is, what do you want to stand out for?
Exactly.
You want to stand out because you have a sweater that's so low that everybody can see down your blouse, and that's why you get opportunity? Or do you want to be known because you have all the facts?
Right.
I was insulted back in the day, but I find it kind of tickling now. I interned with the CIAA 1988. Four of us, one female, which is me, and three guys.
Okay.
And we're picking the all-conference team or player of the week. And I said, this young man, so-and-so, is like Mugsy Bogues. Okay, you remember him?
Right, yes, of course.
And they said, who do you think you are? Howard Cosell.
Mm.
Now, young girl, feeling a little certain kind of way, okay.
Mm-hmm.
But now I'm like, yeah, I own that.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I own it because I know the facts. You don't know the facts? All y'all doing is sitting here playing Nerf ball, but guess what? Out of all of those, who is in the business and who is not?
Right. Right. Oh, so well said. So well said. And, you know, I think that has to be, and I completely agree with you, right. Of course you want to stand out, especially in the sports world, but you want it to be for the right reason. You know, for me, I wanted to know people to know, you know, I know my stuff. I know my facts. I've been in sports since I was little. I mean, I grew up in the sports world. I used to play sports, you know, and that's why I have such a passion and a knack for them. And like I said, I just grew up around them, you know. I remember growing up and seeing these people I wanted to be like. And now, you know, I wanted to grow up and be like them, but with my own twist, you know, and that's why I'm me, and that's why they're them. And I think, you know, that's what you've continued to do, Monique. You're such an inspiration. And before I let you go, you know, there's one question I do want to ask you, because I'm just going back to our conversation earlier, and I know you're in collegiate athletics, about, you know, females and creating opportunities for them. And then I know we talked about the Ball brothers, and of course, I know you probably saw in the news that the youngest two are actually going to play basketball in Lithuania. But I ask that because, you know, currently, I mean, I feel like, you know, for a lot of men's leagues, of course, we have minor league systems, right? But in women's sports, we don't. So I'm just curious, you know, do you think, you know, for instance, I'll give the WNBA example, you know, after college, if you're looking at basketball, most likely you're going to go to the WNBA or overseas, right? If you want to continue to play basketball. You know, the WNBA, though, it's only so many spots. And then, of course, we see a lot of women go overseas and continue their careers. Same thing for volleyball and the same thing for many other sports. But I'm just curious, for women, do you think there should be some type of minor league system created so there are more opportunities after college? Or, you know, if a female maybe decides to not go to college, do you think that needs to be created? Or do you think, you know, currently the opportunities are there for them to continue their sports careers after college?
Well, more money needs to go toward the established postseason, post-collegiate, so that they can earn a salary that is commensurate to some extent to the males, because that's why they're playing overseas.
Right, right.
So, you know, sponsorships and things of that nature, that needs to be increased. And you can't, you know, you can't make money off of ticket sales for the day of.
Okay.
The money is made off of packages, off of sponsorship deals, and it has to be somehow or another infiltrated back to the players.
Right.
There are some minor leagues, but they're not called that. One of my friends, Burnell Hooker, she has a women's basketball professional league. I think it's called ABA or ABLA.
Okay.
And it's Milwaukee something. And so there are enough up. I think it's a feeder for the WNBA, but the point is that there are some professional outlets that are in state and that can be used to either increase the level playing field. But, you know, people don't go to games because they don't know the players. I mean, they might know one or two. But then again, when you know them, do you know they're in your city close to you? You
right.
know, like, I was a Shoni Schimmel fan. I mean, I was going to go wherever she was.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. The girl could shoot.
You know what I mean? I mean, but I got to be entertained because my time
right.
is precious. I love sports, but I got some other stuff I could be doing. But,
right.
you know, it's a marketing tool. It's a marketing tool for the sponsor to
mm-hmm.
get them to give to it. And it's a marketing tool to get butts in seats. And so
right.
it's got to be commitment to that. And, you know, one thing that you said that I want to come back to, you
mm-hmm.
said just like what you're doing with highlighting girls that are doing well in high school.
Right.
You know, if you are a sports reporter, and even though you're not assigned by to cover it from from your editor,
right.
you
right.
still have a platform that you can be able to highlight people from your Twitter.
Oh,
you
my
can
God,
still
yes.
talk about it. So
right.
it's going to take commitment from people who believe in it, whether you have been assigned to do that or not. And that's what's going to
yeah.
take to make it happen.
I think you said that so well. As you said, social media, especially now, I mean, you literally have at your fingertips, you know, a way to get the news out there and spread it so others can see it. So I completely agree with you on that. Monique, you said so many great tidbits. Thank you again for being my guest. It was such a joy and pleasure to have you. It was a fun conversation, and I know everyone enjoyed it. And for everyone listening, that's a wrap for this edition of Listen In with K&N. I hope you had fun, learned something, and, of course, jumped in on the K&N bandwagon. Be sure to listen in each and every week for new shows that drop online at FoxSports1340AM.com and KelseyNicoleNelson.com. If that's not enough, the show is available for download on iTunes and Google Play. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review. Your feedback and support matter. Until next week, enjoy the sports world, smile, and don't take your fantasy sports too seriously, because there's always another play.
Advertisement and sponsorship opportunities are now available for Listen In with KNN on AM 1340 and 96.9 FM, Fox Sports Radio, WHAP. Become a part of the hottest new sports talk show in the nation's capital, fueled by one of the largest national sports radio networks. Hosted by award-winning sports personality Kelsey Nicole Nelson, Listen In with KNN brings listeners the latest trending topics in sports and in entertainment each week. So if you're looking to maximize your brand's exposure alongside the best local and national sports coverage, plus special live editions of Listen In with KNN from venues around the region, email Kelsey at kelseynelson@foxsports1340am.com. For more information about Listen In with KNN, visit foxsports1340am.com. Follow Kelsey on Twitter at TheRealKNelson. You've been listening to Listen In with KNN. on AM 1340 and 96.9 FM, Fox Sports Radio.